Lucas Hardy from
Yes.
Range of Strength. Range of Strength on Instagram for everyone who is not following you yet. Before I say anything, well, I will say you are my current coach right now, trying to improve my mobility, my flexibility, and my strength all at the same time. But
Yeah.
I just want to give you an opportunity. Just who are you? Where are you from? What do you do? This is our first time ever talking. Like,
Yeah.
we've had less than a 60 seconds of total talking, so I'm excited to get to know you better. But just tell everyone who you are, where you're from, what do you do, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I'm from a small province in Canada called Nova Scotia. And I always tell people, because most people don't know where that is, but if you've seen World War Z with Brad Pitt, it's where everyone escapes to because no one's going there. No one's there. So it's really far east in Canada. Small town culture kind of upbringing. Grew up playing sports. Got heavy into the gym around high school and graduating high school, figuring things out. Wasn't sure what I wanted to do, so I just spent all my time in the gym. And next thing you know, someone was like, we could pay you to be here, And so I was like, okay. But that led into personal training. And that was 2005. I started personal training. It was quite a while ago. And that evolved into going back to college and getting into kinesiology and this kind of work, like realizing that was what I was passionate about, what I wanted to do. I spent some time with a heavy sport performance focus, actually. So it's kind of funny when you look at my stuff now because you're like, man, this guy, everything's kind of led to the direction we are now. I worked for the Canadian military for 10 years as a physical instructor. And throughout that time, I was getting into social media. I was sharing, actually started my social media journey sharing my transformation from like broken power lifter to dad trying to get into gymnastics. Like we had just had kids at the time. So I know you kind of experienced this stuff too, but I was really limited to the time I had for training. So I got into a lot of calisthenics and body weight stuff. And that really actually exposed me to the world of flexibility because I couldn't do a lot of that stuff because I move like shit. Yeah, that all led to, what you see now with the range of strengths, kind of like a culmination of all those things. That time spent in gymnastics and getting flexible and then coming back to the barbell stuff as a power lifter and just like seeing that there's this potential opportunity to show people there's another way of doing things.
I like that. So you and I know a lot of this, but just from researching you and looking into you before I even got into your program. But so you were a power lifter. You were really big into powerlifting. And then what did that do to you? Like, what did that like really like take a toll on your body, your joints? Like, what happened with that?
Yeah, I think anyone powerlifting at a high level takes a toll on the body, right? You kind of accept that when you're getting into it. You're pushing yourself to limits. I would admittedly was the, flexibility's useless guy, don't waste your time kind of bullshit. And, I ended up kind of putting my foot in my mouth when I just found myself so broken. I couldn't do a lot of things. And I think at that time in my life too, I'd had a few injuries powerlifting, but the last one I had was when we had our twins, and that was when it was like the icing on the cake was like, I can't keep doing this. Like I want to be able to lead by example and really, be able to do a lot of things with my kids. So that led to, getting into other training components, and it just like slowly pushed me closer and closer to like actually taking like working on my flexibility. It was like I was so reluctant because I, had that in my head. I was like, it's genetic, it's stupid. It's whatever. The first time I stretched, I was like, oh yeah, I've actually never actually stretched. So that was just, eye-opening moments for me. And then finding, as you get into coaching and stuff, you start finding these avenues that you aren't exposed to. I think at the start for me was finding Kit Lachlan's work. He's stretch therapy is what it's called now. It was called something else when I found him, but his big tag was like adult flexibility. And I was like, adult flexibility. I was like, what's that?
Such
You're
good
either,
branding.
yeah, it's so simple, but like with someone like me, it's like, you're either flexible or you're not, right? So, he opened up a lot of new doors for me and my way of thinking and training. And yeah, just being able to come back to like what you see now and, the combination of everything, which is what I think a lot of us are looking for. It's like that world that marries the two together, because right now it's like you're either strong and not flexible, or you're either super flexible and weak. And it's just this, ideology that I think is really broken. And I think, it's not that it's always been that way. I think just the last like decade or so, it's just become that way, like this weird way of thinking, like we just don't do old things anymore. It's like, I don't know.
You know, it's, I'll say, so I hire a new coach about every year and a half or so. And I've done this for many years now because there's always more to learn in this industry. There's always more to learn. There's always like avenues that you haven't gone down before. And so, I was trying to figure out who I wanted to hire in this upcoming year in this new part of my life. And I had stumbled across your page, your Instagram, which I encourage everyone to follow, Range of Strength. It'll be in the description of the podcast. And you, the way that you are just outrageously strong and also outrageously flexible and mobile, really, it stood out to me. And it was like, all right, like I want to work with this guy clearly. And there are other people doing it, but also for whatever it's worth, like I trained at Westside big, like Louis Simmons was like a father to me. Like also I see your Westside shirts. I know you have that background. I was like, I relate to you on that level. So there was a lot there that I related to, but the way that you express your strength with your mobility is truly unreal. Like it's absolutely wild. And I wanted to work with you to learn what you know, because you've also been open about like you haven't always known this, you haven't always been flexible, you haven't always just been born with this ability. You've developed it over years, which has been very, very cool. And I actually I always like when I do my zone two, I'll watch YouTube videos or whether it's YouTube videos or Netflix documentaries, whatever it is. And I several of my cardio sessions, my zone two, like I just got wrapped up in your YouTube videos and just like watching a lot of them over the years and hearing you explain how long it took you to get your various mobility accomplishments, your splits, front splits, side splits, pancake, all that. So that's how I got really invested in you and your work and wanting to work with you. And so going forward, it sort of just we'll start off with this. You touched on it very briefly just now, saying, you know, you were one of those people that said, you know, flexibility is like worthless, you don't need it, it's genetic, blah, blah, blah. And I've seen this a real rise in this, like you said, a real rise in this. And it ebbs and flows, but so many coaches are just poo-pooing mobility and flexibility, saying it doesn't matter. And number one, I don't know where the hell this is coming from. Like where they make this up. So I want to hear your thoughts on that. But also, I can't help but notice that I've never seen one of these coaches say that who's actually flexible. Like all of them saying it are very not flexible people at all. Like so, it's I like if I heard if I saw someone who is very flexible and mobile and also strong within that range start to say, yeah, this really isn't beneficial. That would be like, okay, I want to see what this person is saying because they have that range, they can control it. But I've never seen anyone do that. Everyone who has the range and can control it, always very positive benefits of it. It's only the people who are not flexible, not mobile, who are saying negative things about it. So what are your thoughts?
Well, it's just grown so much. I did a really short podcast recently because I just had this like reflecting moment before the new year hit on just like the growth of flexibility, mobility training, more so. I talk more collectively with the terms because I've just learned they're pretty much the same. But mobility, like I just remember, 2005 getting certified and no one even talked about mobility. No one even said that word. It was just like someone coming to the gym. Hey man, I want to get strong and lose some weight. Yeah, cool. Like, let's do some training. Like, move good, feel good, sort of thing. And it's funny because reflecting on that, it really was like the growth and boom of CrossFit, where I just remember that period of time. It was like the movie 300 came out,
All the 300 workouts
And
on
then
YouTube.
it was just this like, Spartan race. And then it was like the CrossFit Games. The CrossFit Games came out shortly after that movie as well, too. And then it was like everyone wanted to do awesome things, which is great. Like it is great, but then it was a realization like, oh, we move like shit. Like we don't actually move well. We don't specialize in all of these things that we now want to do everything. We want to Olympic lift, we want to run, we want to climb a rope, we want to do all these things. And I think the industry really took advantage of that opportunity to say, well, this is how you start training to improve that, which is, mobility training. And I think at that time too, it was also, I think, why my mindset kind of started to shape like that, because I started doing the mobility stuff. I was a newer coach. I was like, okay, what can this offer my clients? And where it was so new, it was like a lot of watered down bullshit, You're just kind of doing a bunch of random stuff. There's a band tied around your waist, and you're doing so many random things. It's a waste of time, really, because you don't even know if it's going to help. And we haven't collected enough information to know if this is like what we need to be doing. So I think where we're seeing ourselves go now is we are figuring out how to just train better for it. So in some sense, I do sometimes agree with some of the argument that, like, mobility might be a waste of time if you're just doing 40 exercises and you don't even know what you're working for, right? Like that often, that's kind of a thing that has started to happen a lot, which those are the people that reach out to me the most. They're like, hey man, I'm lost. I'm doing so many random things and I'm not making progress. And what am I
Yeah,
working on
shitty
here?
mobility training is a waste of time.
Yeah.
Just like shitty
That's,
strength training.
yeah, exactly. The growth of these, training approaches create a lot of that. And I think that's what, you don't want to shit on mobility training as a mobility guy, but I think that's where you can kind of be like, that's not how you do it. Like we still need to train hard. We still need high intensity approaches, but it really comes down to exercise selection, which is very limited when it comes to improving your flexibility. Like everyone's still doing basic, stuff in the gym, like, and it can help you feel good or whatever, but if you're talking about changing range of motion, we need to completely change these exercises and the intensity that we approach them in, which is, what my journey kind of led me to figuring out like best approaches for that, or approaches that I find helpful. And over time, that's through the people you work with. You learn over time, like what's worth, giving someone and what's not worth giving someone. And you move into an online platform where it's a program anyone can access. So you're kind of like, okay, well, at least lead movement should be there and, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's just been a weird kind of reflection. I'm sure you've seen that too, like coming around to where you are. Like, I don't know how long you've been doing the stuff in the industry, but it is good that mobility has gotten that big and we're thinking better about how we train, but it's also the other side of it is where it's just like sometimes it's a bunch of bullshit, and you gotta weed through a lot of those details to see what's, worth actually going for and best approaches for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this since I was 14. That's when I was a wrestler growing up, and I got an internship at a gym outside Boston, and I've been doing it ever since. So I've seen it go from a long ways ago, like so from about like 2005 or so is when I really got into the industry. Now it's interesting with the rise of social media and especially like short form quick content, because people just love to post exercises that do literally nothing just so that because they think it looks cool and it will get them likes and views and follows rather than like the boring basic stuff that actually produces results. What I've noticed is, what I see a lot is coaches, and I almost use the term coach very liberally just because like anyone can call themselves a coach, you know what I mean? But like I see them look at one study, or not even one, like maybe they see one abstract, or they see someone else talk about a study and then they think that they read the study and they understand it. One that I see a lot is people talking about how long duration static stretching prior to heavy lifting could potentially reduce your maximal strength in that lift, which realistically, if you look at it, like number one, don't do long duration static stretching before you do a max effort lift.
It's
Like
stupid.
that's stupid. But
Stupid.
like then they then extrapolate that to say, well, stretching is worthless and it's actually going to hurt your performance. That's what I've seen time and time again, where it's like, why the fuck do you think, like number one, no smart coach is going to have you long duration static stretch before you max a lift. Number two, what I could say though is, if I'm working with someone who's, I don't know, in their 40s or 50s, they might actually benefit from some longer duration static stretching before heavy lifting. I'm probably not going to have them do a one rep max anyway, unless they're actively competing in powerlifting, but they actually might benefit. And even if they have a teeny tiny reduction in force output, it will actually probably still be better for them long term. Right, so
Yeah,
what are
absolutely.
your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing is like, you know, looking at those studies, which I think was like collegiate athletes, you know, and now we're talking about gen population. It's like, it depends on the scenario. Okay, if someone's positions are shitty, as a good coach, I want to create better positions for them prior to them doing that. It's like, hey, I want to improve my squat. It's like, okay, well, some of this stuff beforehand that will help you get into better positions will get better over time, but maybe we start with that because we're trying to get better positions to improve strength over time. Like it's piling shit on top of shit kind of ideology there, right? Where it's like if stretching helps us improve that capacity for that person, given that goal, then yeah, sure. College athletes that are looking at like a millisecond of a sprint time, like yeah, if that's affected, of course. And again, even those protocols that were used, they're silly because you just aren't going to stretch to that extreme before you do very advanced things because they're advanced. They're, you know. So yeah, it is funny to see how those things blow up. And I think that's with any of the evidence that gets presented, which is why you have to be careful with this whole like evidence-based kind of thing, right? Which is like, okay, if a new study comes out and it's a new data for us to look at and say, this is a new way of looking at things. Okay, let's see what, how that goes over time and where's all the practical application for it? Because all these controlled setting, you know, approaches, that's not reality for a lot of us. And it comes down to so many different things, like what's happening within the session, what type of equipment you have, what capabilities this person has, all of these other things, which is why I like how you kind of opened up to say about like working with a new coach each year. And some people kind of don't like that. Some people say like, no, I mean, you learn from being with the same coach all the time. It's like, no, even if the coach is teaching a lot of the same stuff, they think about it differently. They just have other experiences to share, and that'll shape and evolve you as a coach and how you handle some of these practical scenarios that a lot of the research doesn't really ever give you. So it's good to be research informed, but you also have to be informed that the way a lot of it's presented online is just to grab your attention. And, you know, again, the people that have a bias to something like, you know, stretching is bullshit and they just don't just say you don't like stretching. I don't like stretching. Fair enough. That's easy, right? Because I was even like that too. I didn't like it. And most people that say don't stretch have actually never stretched because they just don't like it. Stop stretching. It's like the stop stretching thing's funny because 99.9% of people just aren't stretching anyway. So who are you telling to stop? The people that actually use and make benefits? No one's actually stretching, to be honest. It's the people that are using it and reaping benefits from it are the ones that are actually using it. So it's just funny when you say stop stretching or that's the message being said, because no one actually is stretching. Like at the end of the day, no one is stretching. And it's just.
I mean, even for me, so one of the reasons I like hiring new coaches is because I'm not hiring a new coach in the same discipline. I'm hiring new coaches in different disciplines for different goals, right? Like, I'm not gonna, like, I wanna work with an expert in a specific goal so that I can become more knowledgeable in that. So, right now, I really wanna learn more about flexibility and mobility. And that's why I hired you. And I've already learned so much. And in regard to most people, like, not even stretching, as I've been sharing about it and as I've been learning about it, I've realized, like, most people don't know how to
Yeah,
stretch. It's
exactly.
they often like and people I don't I, this isn't going to be visible to people, but like, you know, they just do like the arm across the chest stretch. Like, they'll do this one or they'll do this, and like that's what they think of
That's not
stretching, or they
stretching.
think that's not stretching. And so what I would love to dive in with you is, could you just start to give an overview of what is stretching? What are the different types of stretching? And what are the different effects that different types of stretching have on the body? Just so people can start to understand what stretching really is.
One of the easiest ways I think about presenting it is thinking of it as very low grade strength training. And I've done some posts on that in the past. I'm probably due to repurpose that message because when I say that, a lot of people are like, oh, I've never thought of it that way, because the whole stop stretching m message is very focused around passive stretching, which most people that are very inflexible can't even be passive. They don't
That's
have
so, I
passive.
never even thought about that. That's so
They don't even,
true.
yeah, they don't have passive tissue quality. So, yeah, okay. If they stretch, they are under load. So, stretching is loading of the tissue the same way we would load it in a strength exercise. And when we're in an effective stretching protocol, there's periods of isometric contractions. And even a lot of the newer research that's like good around stretching, we're actually getting better research about it. It references intensity being primary, like moving yourself to a threshold, learning how to create a strength stimulus. So if you do think about it, wouldn't that be like our ground zero approach for a range of motion that you never expose yourself to and you've never been in before? It's like, absolutely. It's like I can't flex my knee all the way. We're going to use regressed knee flexion flexibility stretches to teach you how to train that position to get better. So I think that's one of the easiest ways to look at it. And there are a lot of it, once you start getting into it, you start realizing that there's like, now there's all these different acronyms and methods for stretching. So you have like PNF, and then you have, FRC's pales and rails, contract, relax, crack meth. Like, and then you realize they're all the same. So, you're like, well, let's start looking and studying all these different approach. And then you come out of it and you're like, oh, it's all the same shit. So
Just named differently.
a year of my life I could have saved by someone just telling me that. But it is nice to have standards, right? So when coaching someone or trying to facilitate a stretch for someone, the first thing they need to understand is that the stretch needs to be held without moving, right? And that's the first thing. If someone stretches, really, no one ever like actually holds the stretch and doesn't move to allow the tissue to build up and create a stretch response. So this is when we start getting into the discussion of like the stretch reflex, for your body to actually allow you to relax deeper into a stretch, the stretch needs to be held. The body has to know, like, oh, we're staying here, right? It's like, if we're not staying there, it's not going to allow you to go any deeper because it doesn't want that range of motion because we're never there. So some practices say like hold for 2 minutes first. Some practices will say other things. Most of the research actually says that it doesn't matter that much and that it's something you can build up over time. So that's important too, right? Because when you start telling someone who hasn't not moved for the first time to say, don't move for 2 minutes, what are the odds of them actually adhering to that, right? It's like, get the fuck out of here. I'm not going to hold this for 2 minutes. This feels like shit. So, I mean, good rule of thumb is like 30 seconds usually is a good amount of time where someone can start to do some stuff. And there's even like, I don't know if we've talked about this offline before, but Thomas Kurz, he was the guy in the 80s that was pushing flexibility. Like, he had
What's
videos out
his book? What's the book that he had?
Stretching Scientifically.
I got
And
that because of you. It's a great book. It's the where
yeah,
he's on the
it
cover, like doing the splits on the
splits.
chairs with the
Yeah.
woman. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a beast. Yeah, he's got like a woman on his shoulder. He's
Yeah.
split. So 80s. But there's so many editions of it because as certain things change, they like had him go and like re-edit it but the first one was like him just like writing about his methods. Like he was, in this experimental kind of phase with flex. This is stuff that I've used or that these other disciplines have used. So it was cool because it's even one protocol that he had that works quite well for most men, I find, is getting into a stretch and contracting to your max right away. So what are you talking about? Like, oh, I have to hold because the stretch reflex and stuff. But like, no, if tissue quality is super, super stiff, it needs a big contraction to start relaxing right away. So he would like, and that book is hilarious because it says like, hold until you're shaking and you can't anymore. Like, when is that, right? So you start looking into that stuff. And you're like, okay, well, at least we know holding the stretch to for a certain duration, and then you have to just start teaching someone contractions. So this is again something most people like, they overthink all exercises, right? Like, should I be
Right.
breathing? Should I be holding my breath? Right. So, it's the same thing in stretching. If we can't actually coach someone, then again, adherence will be very low. So contraction on the stretched muscle, there has to be something. And even if it's just a matter of you feeling like you're squeezing harder, things like this need to be coached. Periods of relaxation are important, which is a word that I don't even use much anymore, because relaxation sometimes means losing intent, right? So I'll tell people to reset. And that just means like reset your posture, your form, all of those things that will make the stretch better. And when someone gets coached through a stretch, then they know it's like, oh, this is like an actual skill. This is just like
Yes.
training. I'm actually training now. So I think that's just what's missing for a lot of people. And what you'll see in all programs that have any stretching in it, it just says like, stretch for 5 minutes. And you're like, what? What does that do to you? So like, what are the odds? Like, there has to be descriptions. There has to be some outlined prescription. Like, how long should I hold? Should I hold without moving? And once you've started coaching enough people through it, and you actually care about it, because if you don't give a shit if someone's
Right.
stretching or not, you start outlining those things a bit more specifically. And then I just think it creates, when someone starts to feel like they have control over the exercise, like any exercise, that's when you know they're winning, right? It's like they start feeling like, is it okay to feel this? Yes, it is. Is it okay to contract my quad more? Yes, it is. It's all good, man. So I think that's, just something that lacks most of the time, which is getting better. There's a lot more people that care about that. I think a lot of coaches also just see that that helps them stand out a bit more too, is like, I actually know how to coach flexibility. That's
Right, right.
like, when do you ever hear that? It's like, what does that even mean? It's like,
They
yeah,
don't know where to
exactly.
begin. They have no clue. Man, I'll tell you, like, these workouts are devastating. Like they're really fucking hard. And like, I deadlifted four times my body weight. Like I don't care. Like I wrestled for years to jujitsu. Like I know what it is to train hard. These are fucking hard workouts, man. And it's very basic. It's, what's interesting, I loved you made a post somewhat recently, describing one of the main programming differences between like traditional strength training versus flexibility or mobility training, which is with the traditional strength training, you max, like you go after, like you do the heavy movement first, right? So you do like the heavy deadlift or the heavy squat first in the workout, then you go to your accessory work. But with the mobility and flexibility stuff, you actually, in order to get the most range, you do the accessory work first to access that range. And then you go into like your max movement at the very end of the workout. So for yesterday, I was testing my front splits and like, man, in between, like when I'm done testing the front splits, because I have three sets and it sucks because I hate the front splits the most because I have to do each side. And it's like, I'm exhausted. It's not like I'm just sitting there holding the stretch. Like I'm, and we can discuss like the contract relax. I'd like to have people hear more about that. But like my contractions are really intense and I'm getting stronger in this bigger range. I just think a lot of people hear strength training and they automatically think barbell, kettlebell, dumbbell. They think, their mind goes to, oh, full range of motion lifting. They don't understand isometric training and how that, like, they've never done it. So they don't really understand how intense it can be. Bro, I'm exhausted, like mentally, physically, and emotionally. My soul has left my body at the end of these workouts. It's really tough.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point to even bring up the frequency of flexibility training, right? Because again, what happens with this thought process of like passive effort, like training hard, is a lot of people will start to think that the solution is to do it every day. It's like, well, we'll give you a couple weeks and your nervous system is going to completely shut down. Right? Because it's just so hard on the body. The body's like, stop putting me in these positions. I haven't rested. It's too much. And even when you do it passively, it's a very similar response. Is like you start trying to just people will do that. They'll start stretching every day. Well, I want to improve my quad mobility. I'm going to really smash the quads every day. And then it just gets resilient. You get overstretched, right? And I think that's the other thing too, that comes up, is people get overstretching symptoms because they're overstretching, right? It's the same as if you're overtraining with your strength training on the barbell, your body's going to let you know, and you're going to have to take time off. So how frequently do you have to do it? Like right now, you're doing like main sessions for the qualities that we're training once a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you say that to someone when it comes to flexibility training, it just blows their mind. And it's like, well,
they can't believe
that,
it.
Yeah, if that blows your mind, you've actually never trained to improve your flexibility before, or maybe trained hard before, because if you're training hard enough, you will need that rest. Like your body will be like, I can't, like, it's rest before we try to expose it to these positions again. And as it recovers and adapts, that's when that stuff becomes more available. And that's when you don't have to do it as much either, which is, again, the big difference there. When you improve your flexibility, is those big sessions that you're doing now, they actually start to shrink a little bit when you start making a lot of gains, because then we can say, okay, well, we just need to really focus here. Mm-hmm. And that's when more opportunities open up as well to get back into, maybe, you know, for me, I went super hard because I wanted to understand it. But even thinking back now, there would have been opportunities to start integrating the bar and the strength and the traditional stuff in more regularly earlier. I just went like monk on the splits and was like, I don't want to do nothing. I was like, I just want to get these splits. But I think that's where a lot of people miss out too, is like you get yourself to a point, you don't have to do as much of that to still make gains and to still build a lot of the stuff in as well too.
Man, I was so sore when we first start, probably the first like 2 weeks. So my wife and daughter and I, we try and go on a walk every day. Doesn't always happen, but almost every day we go on a family walk for a couple miles. And I kept having to be like, tell my wife, like, slow down. Like my legs are so sore. Like it was, I had never trained them in that range before. And again, like I tell a lot of people this, I've had conversations and they don't understand it, because, you know, I come from powerlifting background, like strong, like for my size, I'm pretty freaking strong. And so for me to like be this sore and have never exposed myself to strength training in these positions, it was wild. Like the soreness the first couple of weeks was really intense. And that's where I think it was very eye-opening. It's strength training in positions I've never put myself before, which I feel like might be a good way to, how would you describe flexibility, mobility? How would you explain this to people?
Well, I mean, it's strength training to improve flexibility. That's really the easiest way to think about it, because when we start labeling it as strength training too much, people just start strength training. They're just, you can strength train through greater ranges of motion. And there's even, you know, the recent research came out about like lengthened partials. Like lengthened partials really is a form of flexibility training, but now you just have like, you know, bodybuilders doing really partial tricep extensions. That's fine. Yeah. Like you'll make gains. What it tells us though, because this question comes up a lot to me as well, is like, is flexibility training create a stimulus, like a hypertrophy stimulus, like I'm actually building muscle? And it actually does. And some of the new research actually says that you can build muscle doing some of this static stretch. And it makes sense. Like at the end of the day,
right,
you're stretching the tissue. It's under load isometrically. And even most of these passive stretches are under load. Like you're almost never passive until you own a range of motion, right? It's like you're always, every stretch has a load. So I think passive and active helps us distinguish between the two.
Mm-hmm.
You're always under load. It's always loaded. So yeah, you, again, training flexibility does have that kind of stimulus. So it is strength training. It's just the goal. What is the goal? And it's flexibility improvement, right? It's like powerlifting is powerlifting because it's the big three. So yeah, it's strength training, but it's big three strength training and flexibility. Yeah, flexibility training is strength training, but it's improving positions and certain ranges of motion. And that's, again, another topic there, is like, what the hell should you work for? Because most people don't know what they're working for. They're just stretching random shit. And the outcome's like, I still move the same. I don't have any measurement.
Man, it's crazy how I can feel how much stronger I've gotten, not even just in the traditional lifts, but the carryover to jujitsu has been pretty intense. Caught someone in a triangle choke a couple weeks ago, and I trained with this guy a lot, and he was like, dude, that the squeeze that I had in my legs, well, he was like, I've never felt that from you before. And obviously coming from so much of the adductor work that we've been doing for all of these splits, like just no question, like so much stronger, which has been really cool for me personally. But let's go into different types of stretching, different modalities that we can use. So I think generally people probably understand static stretching is this idea where you hold a stretch for a longer duration of time, 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, whatever. What are some other modalities? I know for like one of the ones that you have me use is CRAC. Can you explain what that is and so people can get an understanding of what that might look like?
The reason I use that acronym is because it explains all of them. So it's probably helpful to have that kind of background before you realize like why CRAC crack method is probably the best go-to, because PNF is proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. And basically just explains the facilitation of a deeper range of motion, which happens when there's a contraction that occurs on the shortening side of the stretch, which is the muscles that are shortening to pull us deeper. So for an example, like a hamstring stretch, your quads and hip flexors pull the leg up. They're shortening. The hamstrings are lengthening. So with PNF, there's that contraction, and then there's the contraction of the hamstrings to then facilitate a deeper range of motion. Try saying proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation to someone or 100 times, and you're like, whatever,
Yeah, I'm
PNF,
out.
right? But then Pales and Rails, FRC, they talk about progressive and regressive angular isometrics. So it's the same thing. We're shortening the tissue, contracting that, and then contracting and lengthening tissue and going deeper. And crack method stands for that. It says contract the lengthened muscle is the first one. So the C for crack, the first C is contract of the lengthen. Then R is relax. And A is agonist contract, which is the shortening muscle. So that's just, I've used that. It helps more people understand. It also helps when I work with coaches that have had exposure to all the acronyms. I'm like, well, they all mean the same. And they're like, oh, okay. So it's like, it's helpful to just kind of know that. So within static stretching is where those qualities are used the most. So when we're not moving statically, we can create these contractions and focus on relaxing deeper into a stretch. When we are moving, that's when it changes a bit. So then we have dynamic active stretching, which is basically mobility, right? So that argument comes up all the time. It's like flexibility is passive and stretching, and mobility is moving. And you're like, well, dynamic active flexibility is moving. That's really what it is. So that's the same. So less confusion when you realize that. But that is when we move in a stretch position, or this is where you can get creative though, right? Because then now it's like, well, what is dynamic active stretch, like stretching, right? So people just think about kicking, and it's like, yeah, kicking is a form of it, but also like you shared a Zercher horse squat in your post today, right? So squatting down with a Zercher horse squat and back, that's a dynamic active stretch. So it gets really creative when you start thinking about how you would create an environment that uses dynamic active stretching to improve range of motion. It's basically strength exercises that accentuate the lengthened position. So static active, static passive, your static active work, a stretch actually has a combination of the two, but it helps to distinguish between how hard we're working. So a static active is easier to understand when we just think about it being an isometric. So if you get into a long lunge position and you're just holding that, we know it's more static active. So when you start thinking about it that way, It makes it easier to understand, but then it also makes it like there's so many opportunities. There's so many ways we can train that fit under that umbrella. And I think that's when, as a coach, like the more that you kind of specialize in that field, or if you have that strength training background like you had with powerlifting, man, there's just like so much stuff you can do.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Let's use an example just so people can sort of picture it. Let's go into like a hip flexor stretch, right? Like a standard hip flexor stretch. Let's talk about like let's walk through what this might look like with the crack method, for example, where your whole like can you explain how they might try it on their own so they could get a better feeling for it? If like let's say they're
For
listening right
sure.
now, you know what? Fuck it. I want to try this. Let's see
Yeah.
what these two nerds are talking about. Like walk them through what that would look like.
Finding your stretch position has to be one that you can hold, right? So again, most people will get in a stretch and say, I don't feel it. Well, that's because the body hasn't actually sat there for a little bit. So a helpful thing to do when you do get into a static stretch. So if it's a hip flexor stretch, like if you're just kneeling on the ground and you're now trying to stretch your hip, try to stay just outside of your maximum range of motion. So most of us can sit down and just try to push into the max. Just stay about 5 degrees out of that and hold. So hold until you feel a sensation start to accumulate, which is the stretch sensation. The body's starting to say this muscle's stretched. It's starting to create energy in that direction. And that's when we can start the crack method. So oftentimes, I will just put a window of work into it. I'll say 60 seconds of crack. And the first time you see that, you're like, what the hell are you talking about? But it helps because people will think too much about how long they should be contracting. But just rotate between the two and give your body what it needs. I think that's helpful because then you're actually learning to be in the stretch. Because if I'm sitting there and I'm like, one, two, three, relax, one, I'm not actually just like, I'm not learning to just be there. So the first C in crack, it stands for the lengthened muscle. So the hip flexors are being stretched. That's the muscle that's lengthened. So we have to have some understanding of how the body works to learn how to contract that. But the hip flexor lifts your leg. So if I'm in a kneeling hip flexor stretch, it's an isometric feeling like you're trying to drive your knee forward. Like you're trying to think about lifting my knee up. So you start to do that as hard as you want. Like if you're doing it a little bit and you feel it, okay, that's good, but ramp it up if you're not feeling it. And the intervals that work best are around 5 to 10 seconds. So ramp that up, feel it. If you want to hold it a bit longer, fine. Just it feels good, right? You're like, it actually feels good. This is what I need. Then the R stands for relax, which I said earlier, I use reset now because sometimes relax, people just like deflate and they go to
Yeah.
shit.
Yep. That
So
makes sense when you put it like that. Yep.
yeah, think about resetting the quality of the stretch, which the pelvis needs to posterior tilt for the hip flexor. So we would think about like setting that. Then we contract the muscles that are shortening to bring us into the stretch. So we can think of, in this scenario, we can think about like the hamstrings and the glutes. So they're playing a role there. It can be a little bit creative. For that stretch, it's usually just squeezing your ass as hard as you can.
Yeah.
You do that and you're feeling those tissues start to work, and they'll intensify the stretch a little bit more. And as you're doing that, you'll feel like you can relax deeper, but there's no stress if you can't. Right? Like you're just most of the time, if you've just gone through one cycle of that, you've already held the stretch probably for a minute and also held it before we started that. So all of a sudden, you're almost 2 minutes in and you want more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So it's really more so, I don't want to say as simple as that because some people might be like, what the hell? But just giving yourself freedom to learn how to do that on both sides of the stretch is a good start. And if you're actually just paying attention and doing that really well, you're getting more time under load in a stretch position than you probably ever have in your life. So it's going to feel amazing, right? Like then we can start to learn more static active methods of training that probably are the ones that make you feel a little more trash, like you're talking about, because this oftentimes we need to do some of that stuff before we stretch, because we can't even be in a stretch position, we're so tight. So it kind of, they work together a little bit, but yeah, a basic stretching protocol would look something like that. And the goal as a coach to guide someone through that is to make sure that they feel like they can do it. And if someone can feel like they can do it and they understand it, then they're winning, and you know, they're going to want to do it again. And that's the big one, is like, it's just like training someone in a gym when they come in, we want to make sure they come back.
Makes
It's
total
like,
sense.
you know.
One thing that's surprised me a lot, and you're gonna be like, well, duh, but like for it's been very cool for me to realize this, it's that how much that agonist contraction really helps.
Yeah.
And it makes sense for me with the hip flexor one. That was almost obvious. So for agonist contraction here, to get a deeper hip flexor stretch, you squeeze your glutes. Right, squeezing your glutes, you essentially push your hips forward, and that contraction helps you get a deeper hip flexor stretch. The one that surprised me the most was how much it's helped with my middle splits, my side splits. Like, you have me doing essentially what looks like sort of a sidekick isometric hold, like to really work that glute med, like working my butt a lot and almost. Every time I do it, I really try and push the range, try and bring my leg up higher and higher and really get more agonist contraction with my glutes. And then after that, then we go into the side split testing. And I think for at least for me, when I thought about side splits, it was like, oh, my adductors have enough length where I can just sit down and my like balls hit the ground and that'd be great. But it's not just that. It's also the active pulling my legs apart with my glutes that was the and there was a couple I don't know, maybe a week or two ago, I made a really big improvement in my side splits that I got a couple extra inches out of nowhere, and it was the day that I put more effort into those side splits that sorry the side kicks, like they're getting the range of that agonist contraction. It's not just the passive lengthening muscles, it's the active shortening muscles that really have surprised me a lot.
Well, this is the other thing to think about. If you do have training experience, we know that supersetting in the gym is like a go-to. You get massive pump, you save time, you know, I'm gonna bicep, triceps, you're huge. Interset stretching is pretty well researched, and the research that comes out to say like this is of high value and this is why you should use it is when we stretch the opposing muscle group that's being trained. But if we think about what that is, that's just stretching, right? So if I'm going to pump up my bicep and then I'm going to stretch my tricep and it gives me better peak and contraction of my bicep, well, that's what stretching is. It's just the interval of work on both sides. So I really do like interset stretching for improving of range of motion if you have that hat on, right? So if I'm going in there and I'm like thinking not about blowing up my arms, even though that's awesome, but I'm thinking about improving knee flexion, I would do hamstring curls and couch stretch. That, and it, again, that's just stretching, because stretching is just contracting your hamstring. So that agonist activation, it relaxes and facilitates relaxation. So that's called the reciprocal inhibition of the lengthened tissue. Then you stretch, and all of a sudden, now you're not only improving the length of the quad, but you're getting more out of your hamstring work. So, yeah, that's probably where you'll see how some of my sessions are laid out. It's basically we're like supersetting and training hard, but it's meant to be for the purpose of facilitating stronger range of motion in a certain position. So, if you know what you're working for, if you have a bit of training history, I did do a long form episode on YouTube about interset stretching and just broke that down. Like, basically, if you just think about what stretching is, you can just start coupling exercises in the gym if you're a meathead like me. Just next thing you know, you're improving flexibility and getting a nice pump at the same time.
Makes total sense. Is that the reason why there's such a big emphasis on strengthening the hip flexors? I've noticed that in your training, but also in a lot of calisthenics work and a lot of this evidence-based stretching mobility work, there's a huge emphasis on strengthening the hip flexors, which is funny because in other areas of the quote unquote evidence-based world, it's like you never train the hip flexors. It's just like you lengthen, 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 never train them. So can you talk about like what is the reasoning behind that? It's because I'm doing a lot of hip flexor work with you and it feels great and it's helped a lot. I know you mentioned compression strength and all of this, but tell me about the hip flexors and why we train them so much.
Well, that's just what we're doing is we are training like long lever hip flexor work is when the leg is straight and we're like now doing leg lifts and stuff like that. And it was funny because there was a time around 2010 and stuff where the industry was like, don't do long lever hip flexor work. It's bad for your back. It's like bad for my back. Is my back just shit? And that's why that's bad. Like, you know, so, I don't know. I don't know if people are getting excited about hip flexor training in that short range just because there is still that argument of like, don't stretch your hip flexor, strengthen it. And it's like, yeah. But again, the stretch is a strength exercise. So stretching the hip flexor and strengthening it in that short range, the big emphasis in my programming on that short range hip flexor is more so on the active flexibility components of the length inside. So you do see that with like your leg lifts and side abduction kind of kick kind of stuff. It's like we're trying to get passive tissue qualities better on the other side. So we train those things harder for that. But it's also just like the stuff that's lacking anyway. So if you think about the stuff no one's doing, it's like, yeah, if we learn to create that hip flexor strength, the hamstring stretching or the adductor stretching is just going to be so much better. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to say, but like ensuring that I think that mindset is on it. Like the reason we're doing this is so that we can get lengthened positions better. I think that creates a better approach to balance with it rather than saying, don't stretch, do this. It's like, well, this does that. And then, you know, stretch better.
Makes total sense. That was one of the things, for example, like doing the pike or the toe touch, for example. Man, my abs were so sore for the first couple weeks, and I remember like one of the first messages you sent, you're like, compression strength, brother. Like, can you talk about how, because when I've been sharing a lot about my mobility and dude, now like I know you've seen. My face is squished into my knees when I'm doing the pike now, where I'm bending over. And before, like I could always touch my toes. I always like had mobility enough for that. But to get my palms flat on the floor, and now to get my like completely bent over face smushed in the knees, people are like, "What the fuck are you doing?" Can you talk about just that movement in particular, compression strength? Just give people some concepts to understand.
Well, compression strength, that's one of the easiest ways to think about it. It's very popular in gymnastics. I think if you want to really like go into that world to see the requirements and what the body can do with it, it's used quite heavily for tumbling. It's used for an aesthetic for movement practices. Like they need that the body has to compress to move in and out of positions. But everyday person that doesn't know how to touch their toes doesn't know how to actually bend forward. A bit, we can solve a lot of problems here by understanding how to use all the muscle qualities that pull us into that stretch. So that's very hard for like to think about doing, right? It's like, how do we contract and pull ourselves into a folding stretch? So there's lots of different strategies that can be used for that. We've used like squishing a block as one where you squish the block between your midsection and thighs, standard seated leg lift type work. One that works quite well for people that aren't used to it is like a banded Jefferson curl. So imagine the band is attached overhead and you're pushing the band down. Well, the only thing that's going to work there in that setting is going to be the shortening side, so the compression. So this, think of compression strength as the strength you have on the musculature that compresses the body or is able to create a more kind of deeper stretched position. So that strength, even a post I made today, it showed the hanging pike versus the standing pike. And the hanging pike is a demonstration of active compression strength because you can't really,
Right.
you won't come in like that unless you have that component. So it's, I think for a lot of people, the compression strength side of it is also what opens up a lot of doors in terms of creating real flexibility that's strong, right? So we're getting away from this passive kind of ideology, just stretching. And it's like you're learning some of these components before you stretch so that we have really strong movements, really strong positions when we stretch, and we know what's pulling us into that position. And then, you know, you could be getting into other stuff like an L-sit. A very basic gymnastic skill is a great skill to work towards for the everyday person because it takes care of all those things. Like it really,
Right.
you know, I think top 5%, 10% of people can do an L-sit. And if you can get yourself up to that, like, you know, you're in that bracket of people that don't have that skill. And it's quite easy to obtain if you work towards it, and it'll help your mobility, flexibility, and all that stuff.
Man, I think probably if it's not my favorite, it's definitely my top three favorite exercises I've learned from you is the compression slides.
Yeah, that's a
The
good.
I the first time I did it, like I got those ab cramps in my lower abs. I was like, oh my God. But it's been so cool to watch myself improve with that one. And as I've improved with that, I've noticed my pike improves. Like every time I hit like a little personal record with that, I noticed my pike improve. And I had movements like that with powerlifting where if my weighted glute hamstring raise got stronger, then my deadlift was going to hit a pr I just knew, like I knew if I like hit a PR with my glute ham raise, I was going to hit PR on my deadlift. Lately I've been noticing if I can control the compression slide, not just for a longer period of time, but r reach a further range as I reach outwards, I know I'm going to get deeper in my pike. It's been very, very cool to see.
And it's creating a quality of the pike that kind of is overthought too, is like actually reaching, right? So people just bend forward and they don't actually think of actively reaching the shoulders, actively moving the body. So even a lot of times, most of us are walking around with, you know, maybe 20% more flexibility than we know we even have. And it's just teaching positioning. So it's like, well, this is how you set your hip. And then all of a sudden, you got like 10 degrees more range. And you're like, oh my God, I didn't know I could do that. So you get that understanding of your body through the exercises so that you then can access that stuff on a regular basis. If you're in jujitsu or if you're, you know, if you just have that basic understanding of how you can access more range of motion, maybe you're not touching your toes right away, but if you've got 5 degrees more just because you know how to articulate your hip, it's like that's kind of part of it too, is sometimes people don't, they just save exercises they see online. They don't think about like articulating the movement or understanding how it's being executed.
Makes total sense. Do you have a couple more minutes or you got to hop off?
I'm good.
Okay. All right. So a couple more minutes. One thing I've done with previous coaches is just get like have insight. People have enjoyed it in terms of like get insight on my training with you. Do you have any feedback on how things have been going with what I've been doing? Is there anything that I can do better as a client? Is there like anything you've seen that like just as a coach, what have you seen, and what do you think so far with my training?
Well, you remind me a lot of me when I started. So that's good and bad because we have a strong training background. We've pushed ourselves very hard, and flexibility's, it is kind of sketchy when you do start pushing yourself very hard because we don't really know, right? So we don't, it's like, oh, I feel fine. You know, it's just you're in this very vulnerable position. So I think with you, you've made substantial progress really quick. As a coach in that scenario, I got to pull you back a little bit just
Right,
to be
right.
like, you know, ensure that the expectations are in place where it's like you could still continue to make, but I have to be like, you know, 5 degrees every 3 months is a lot. Where we, the other
Right.
day, we made like 10 degrees difference. I was like, holy shit. So, you know, my job in that sense is to ask a lot of questions. Okay. What's the intensity feel like there? How long do you feel like you can hold that position? Because there's a, you know, it's the same as maxing out your squat every day. Maybe it goes good for 3 weeks and then all of a sudden you're like, I can't even hit that anymore and I feel like
Right.
shit. So there's a bit of a pullback there, but as long as that message gets communicated, which that's actually an easier job for me because most of the time you're dealing with people that don't know how to push themselves. So now I'm trying to say, like, can you do a little more? You know, can you just push a little harder? So it's, yeah, kind of like a double-edged sword. It's like you get someone that can push so hard that flexibility training when it's new and exciting like that might, you know, be something where we got to be like, okay, just hold off a little bit, make sure we make the progress in a way where it's maintainable and it feels sustainable. And then you have sometimes individuals that you got to really coax and push to get going a little bit. So yeah, I mean, the other thing with that with you is like also starting to get to a point where we isolate goals a bit more, because flexibility training is just like, if we're thinking about powerlifting, just think about your big three. They're never all progressing at the same time. It's always like, hey, deadlifts are going good right now. I'm gonna like really try to hit a PR bench and squat. I'm just gonna keep doing it, but nothing's happening. The same thing is goes on in flexibility training, where you kind of maintain sessions or approaches, but you're not gonna see improvements in all of them. And that's important to know, because then you will start to maybe push yourselves harder in certain sessions. So you're really making a lot of headway in your front split. Maybe we could start having more intense sessions there, or just bumping up a little bit. And then on the others, we just know like we're maintaining, right? So the exertion in that session is being maintained. We're not looking to get PRs every week. So that kind of stuff will help people that start to advance to higher levels, or that they want that, understanding that not every quality will progress like all the time. So then you can prioritize goals, but once you've had that introduction to it, you know it's good to keep the other qualities there. So you don't abandon them completely, but it's good to have those there. And there's a bit of a waterfall effect to that. If you're training your pancake split, it's going to carry over to front split, where that might have more intensity. So, you know, just that little bit of background, just really helps when you get to that point. But yeah, I guess just thinking more about where you're at with it and where my head's at when I see you going hard with it is like, yeah, you've made a huge, huge progress. And I think that'll be, we might hit that part where you're like, man, I haven't made progress in a little while. And that will be like, this is where. Yeah.
That makes sense. It's funny that you bring that up because for the first probably like 6, 7 weeks, I was going hard on all of the days. We have 4 days right now. We have like the front split day, the pancake day, the pike day, and then the middle split day. And I was going super hard on all of the days. And then after about like almost 2 months, I was like, I'm like tired. Just like I'm really tired. And so I looked at it, I was like, okay. I looked at like you just said, like powerlifting. I was like, listen, the pancake is not my main goal. And like the pike, I've already made such good progress. I could just stay here and I'd be very happy. Like, so on those days, I have already been downgrading it in terms of intensity, just like almost maintenance sessions. Whereas the front split day, because I am so much closer, I'm like really close to hitting that, especially on my good side. And then the middle split day, just because that's like my main, like I just want to get that. I want to do that on the chair and holding my daughter. Like I really want to get that freaking picture, dude. Like
Yeah, that's gonna
I want
be sick.
to get like that picture of me doing the splits. And I saw like, you know, I've seen you do the splits where like I forget the name of it, but you're doing the splits on an elevated surface and you pick up a weight. I saw you do that and Jiu-Jitsu Mufu do that. Where like you're just like picking up like tremendous amounts of weight. I want to do that. Like that's my like goal.
Van Dam lift.
Yeah, the Van Dam. Exactly. So those two sessions are my really hard sessions for the week, and then the other two sessions are my more moderate. So it's cool to hear that that's the right way to go about it. And then because I feel like I'm about to hit the front split on the good side, I would imagine within maybe a couple months. But yeah, man. I mean, I appreciate you immensely. It's been a pleasure working with you thus far, and I'm really excited to see what we can accomplish over the next year or so. And can you just remind everyone, it'll all be in the description, but where they can follow you?
Instagram is my biggest platform, but I've been working a lot harder to get on the other ones in the last year. So I do enjoy YouTube. Actually, I enjoy sharing on there because you can actually talk longer about stuff and get
Yes.
into the weeds and stuff. So I have been putting some good long form videos out on there. There's one I'm working on this week actually for the bent press, the old time bent press.
Oh,
I'm gonna get
nice.
a nice session in with that. But yeah, Instagram is my biggest platform, and I'm on all the other ones at some degree.
Is it the same handle range of strength on all the platforms? Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, and like I said in the beginning, I really dove into your longer form content when I was doing some zone two, so I encourage everyone to do the same. I prefer long form content over short
Yeah, me
form
too.
content. Like I like these podcasts, I like YouTube videos just because you can actually discuss the nuance and you're inherently targeting a group of people who are they value what you're saying more, right? They're ready and willing to sit down and listen for a long time as opposed to the Instagram, like if it's 60 seconds, like it's a really long video. I really don't want to watch the whole thing. It's annoying. And then they get pissed when you don't say exactly what you think you should say. It's like, well, there wasn't enough time for that fucking nuance.
It's like I've kind of thought about it lately too, to like I'll think about what I didn't say and I'll be like, well, it'll come up in the comments and we can discuss it there. So
Yeah,
you can't hit
exactly.
everything in those posts.
But thank you, man. I'm gonna hit stop recording right now, but thank you so much, brother.
Thanks for having me on. Enjoyed it.